We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is the Gator Nation Football Podcast with your hosts, Alan Williams and James DeVirgilio.
Now we know we're just a bunch of average stiffs.
Scared money don't make money, you know?
Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Stadium and Gale. We're reporting from the social at Midtown with the Gator Nation Football Podcast. And this is powered by Fango. Make sure you go purchase all your tickets. Also, post your tickets on Fango. And Allen Horn Insurance, who's a State Farm provider. We got some special content for you guys today, man. Dan, how you feeling? You good?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. A pleasure to have Alan and James join us. Nick, I appreciate you guys carving up a Tuesday afternoon. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're just going to talk a little bit about the Gators and, you know, this season, kind of what we expect, what we've seen, and just kind of get some different perspectives. You know, it's good to bring the Gator Nation guys in today. So James, Alan, want to get your thoughts on the season thus far. The Gators are 3-1. Some ups, some downs, but James, start with you, bud.
Well, we did our season predictions, you know, before the year, and essentially it ranged from we could win maybe 7 or 8, and in disaster mode we could win 4. Right. After Utah, we revisited that, and it was like it could be 4 or 5, and now we're at 3. So it feels like with the defense that Florida has, 7 or 8 is achievable with the defense alone, and maybe a 50 to 60th ranked offense, which is where we're trending. But most of our games obviously are coin flips. So, you know, to me, it's sort of where I thought maybe we would be. It looks a little different, but I, for one, could not be more excited about the defense and Coach Armstrong. I think we have a guy that's a top-level talent at that spot, and I think our on-field coaching, as we know from last year, needed that. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, the coin flip stuff is both exciting and scary from a fan perspective, because you go into every game, maybe one or two things are going to happen,
right,
and you don't know which way it's going to go. But from just a pure entertainment point of view, it's awesome because you don't know. Like, we're not just going to go rolling through the SEC East like we're the OA Gators or something like that.
I don't know if the timeline has that same thought process. Yeah. I don't know if they think it's super fun to go into every Saturday not knowing what's going to happen.
It's been 4 different UF football teams that have showed up, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously,
yeah.
Completely full of mistakes in game 1. Game 2 against McNeese State, they're firing on all cylinders. Game 3, they get out quick. They go real conservative in the third quarter, or second half, third quarter, fourth quarter. And then this last game against Charlotte, offense moves, but we can't score a touchdown. Mm. So got to try to put them all together. Alan, want to get your thoughts. Let's talk offense real quick, because you got a lot to talk about defense too. But Graham Mertz, internet was not happy when Graham Mertz was coming to Florida. Billy Napier said they evaluated 32 guys. The internet's like, which 32 guys from what high school did he evaluate for landing Graham Mertz? He's doing spectacular. Leading the SEC in completion. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I like him. I think he's what we thought he could be. He's probably playing towards the top end of that kind of variance. We haven't seen a bad Graham Mertz performance, but I fully thought he was capable of this. So it's not surprising. You know, I think the limitations that we're facing as an offense is not Graham Mertz limitations. There are other things that are holding this team back from getting where they want to go.
The offensive line, Nick. Let's talk offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, offensive line is just a spot where you need cohesion, you need consistency and familiarity, and you've only had two games where the offensive line was the same five.
Right.
You haven't had Kingsley Aguak, and I think he's going to try to give it a go this week, but you're just plugging and playing new pieces. And, like, you can do that at receiver. You can do that in the backfield at running back. But if one offensive lineman out of five has a bad play, the play tends to just be bad overall. So that's going to be a huge thing. I think Kentucky this week blitzes a lot. They'll bring people from other places. I wonder how Graham Mertz handles that. Florida did not handle their first road test handling it with offsides, false starts, holding, stuff like that. How do you handle it this week? And if you have a brand new offensive line again, if Kingsley can't go, or if Damian George is limited, then how does Florida's offensive line handle essentially the same size stadium that they failed in Utah?
James Allen, you guys study the tape far more than we do on our podcast. Offensive line, James, I know you're bread and butter. Everybody loves watching you. What's been the offensive line? Has it been that they've changed individuals every game, or change the starting five every? What's the issue with the offensive line?
Well, we said on the pod yesterday that it's possible, at least in my opinion, that Kingsley maybe is, if not the most important, but the second most important player on Florida's offense right now. That's in large part because of the zone style that Florida tends to run with, and we run with some power. The center in Billy's offense has a lot of responsibility on making sure they get that stuff correct. And obviously with a true freshman playing behind him in Slaughter, there is a definite drop-off in just what you would consider to be correct movement of the offensive line. Versus Tennessee, it was by far the best we've seen that line perform, just from a technicality aspect. And so if Kingsley doesn't play in this game, for me, that may be the guy we've missed the most, just what we've seen on film. So I think he might be the main driver of that. We've seen some pretty good performances in other places relative to the youth of where we're at. But I think all in all, this line at best would be average if everything is clicking. And I think we've gotten more or less what we've expected.
It's a tough pill to swallow.
Which is, if everything is good, it's probably
average.
It's probably average. And right now, I think all of us here know that, you know, Mertz has had the third least amount of time, right, in the SEC to complete pass. He's like 2.37 seconds. Which is very low.
Well, I know from experience.
Right, and that does have to do with shuffling things around. But also, I do think when Kingsley's in there, there's a level of stability he brings to this unit. So I think he's extremely important this season.
I question, like Stapleton and Sale certainly have a type. If you're not 6'5", 320, you're probably not getting swiped right on their recruiting dating app. So is that kind of guy? Like you say, they run more zone concepts. That's not the body type for zone. Zone, you're getting guys who are 6'3", 290, can run and move in space. And Florida's building like this gigantic wall of human and then asking them, hey, how are you also running and flowing through the offense?
That is a great question and one that we've been unable to answer. We openly talked about that, and I'd love to get an answer from them because it is a mismatch. If you look at the NFL, where, you know, this zone scheme's been run for 40 years, it's always exactly what you just said. That is the prototype. And Florida is deviating so significantly from that. And on film, you can see that we have a very hard time getting into the second level with any kind of, you know, consistency because these guys just aren't fast enough for that kind of stuff. And when we do tend to run gap style, we're pretty good because these guys are more of a power blocking unit. But we still probably spend 80-85% of our snaps running zone scheme. So I don't know the answer to that question. It's very interesting, and it doesn't really seem to fit with what you would want if you're going to have, you know, zone offensive linemen. So that's a good question.
That's a new T-shirt. Run power.
Run power.
I got a question for you. Just from a schematic standpoint, there's been, I think, like, Graham Mercer has been great with accuracy, efficiency, but it's been a lack of explosive plays. What do you attribute that to? Is Graham not seeing something on film, or is it Billy just playing move the sticks and possess the ball?
Yeah, I think it's mainly scheme, which wouldn't be a surprise to anyone who's listened to me talk about it before. And I think it's funny. It's like all of us here, I don't think any of us, I certainly wouldn't describe myself as a hater of anything or a lover of anything.
That's my role.
Okay, there you go. You're just negative, Nick. You're analyzing what you see, and you're saying, this is what I think could fix the situation. Not that personally, it doesn't matter. Do it one way or the other. But I think what we see on film is we don't see a lot of Florida receivers open. And then we also see, last year we saw it too, I think, a mismatch with Florida's personnel. If we all know as coaches that we have trouble on the O-line, then we probably need to not run as many play action passes. We probably need to try to go vertical, but we need to do that by using some pre-snap formation shifts to get predictable man-to-man matchups and take some shots that we know are safe. But Florida seems reticent to do that. Just like last year, it's Billy's system. We're going to run it no matter what the scheme or fit looks like. And right now, Mertz has not had a lot of opportunities. Last game, he did have a couple that he missed that Florida ran an out and up that was nice. They had another seam go that was nice. But if we're nitpicking like two or three a game, right, it's not enough. So I think the margin for error, to kind of put a bow on this, Billy's offense in the passing game creates a tiny margin for error. And if it's not working, it's almost like it's just not there. And if you look at success rate, which we talked a lot about yesterday, an advanced stat, on passing down, second and seven or third and five and longer, throughout all of Billy's career, it is by far the worst part of his offensive scheme. And that's intuitive. It passes the eye test. But I think that, Silk, answers your question, is that we have a scheme issue. It's not a Mertz issue. I'd love to see Mertz get a chance to make some of these throws. Right. And Mertz is doing a good job keeping Florida on schedule and minimizing it and not turning the ball over and obviously just hitting the passes he can. But I'd like to see him get a chance. And I think Florida has to have this happen if they want to win more games down the field.
Better offensive linemen and faster receivers, this might work more efficiently. But the reality is we don't. And we don't seem that we acknowledge that.
I don't think Billy's a coach that can kind of scheme towards personnel. So the more he gets his guys in, it may become more successful. Mm-hmm. That's why I think we're seeing, I guess, more the younger guys playing because they fit the style of play that he wants. But, yeah, it's going to be a struggle for a little bit.
And I've started to question if Graham, like last year, Anthony had the latitude to change plays at the line of scrimmage to get you out of something. Maybe Graham isn't there yet. Like, there's a couple of looks watching your show last week. You're seeing fronts where it's like, if I'm the quarterback and we're in a run play, they've got nine in the box.
Yeah.
There has to be a kill or a check or something to get us out of this.
Yeah.
And instead, it's like, what if we just ran our forehead directly into this wall and see what happens?
Yeah, so this is really funny that you mentioned that exact point because from what I understand, Graham has full control of the audible system. But we saw this last year, too. We see it again this year. Coaches do this. I have to believe there are overrides in place, and you're mentioning them right now. By all accounts, Graham is like a football savant. Mm-hmm. That guy watches more film than anyone else is. One of our friend of the program, Danny Warfel, talks a lot with him and talked a lot about the fact that he's like a football guy. Like if this guy's sitting right here right now, he's breaking down film with the best of us. There's no chance he doesn't count the numbers in the box and think, I'm checking to a pass unless there's an override. And a story I'll share on that comes from Danny since we mentioned it. Danny leaves Spurrier and he goes to play for Mike Ditka. Mm-hmm. And at the time, Spurrier is a finesse coach, which would always bother Spurrier, but Spurrier would say he was just winning with innovation. Mm-hmm. And Ditka was old school. Mm-hmm. So they're in the league, Danny gets in, it's his first action, and Danny's like, we're calling the play, and the opposing team knows exactly what we're going to do. They're calling out our exact play. They're running through the B gap, power lead. And hands the ball off, they get smoked. Mm-hmm. Ditka calls timeout. He is just killing the team. I don't care if they know every single play we're running. It's about effort. It's about heart. It's about beating the man in front of you. And Danny was like, Mike Ditka gave the best pregame and halfgame speeches of any coach he's ever been with. But when it came to innovation, his mindset was old school. And Spurrier wasn't going to give a speech that made anybody excited. But on the field, he was diagramming and diagnosing stuff to get you open. And so I think that is what you're mentioning. I think it's more of a Mike Ditka slash conservative, get a little tight mentality. Third and one, let's be safe. Let's run the ball. Where I think Mertz, if I'm playing quarterback, you got to be thinking, this is what I'm waiting for.
Yeah.
And so I have to, without information, take a guess that that's probably not a Mertz thing.
Mm-hmm. You think it's more personnel of what they have now and trying to fit in? Corey, I want your opinion on this too. Is it more personnel of this is who we have? This is what we have to run with this week and this year, and do you think that there might be some changes as those guys that kind of fit that Billy Napier mold a little bit more? So what are your thoughts?
It's rough because our offensive line leaves us limited. Mm-hmm. In my mind, like once we lose a guy or two, it's hard to get creative with the playbook because you don't have time to even run plays. It's hard to run plays if you don't have time. So do I think we see some changes through this season? I think we start seeing younger players play. Like some of the receivers that aren't getting open, maybe a younger explosive guy like Mazzell, maybe he run that same route. He gets more open because he's an explosive sprinter. But that's the only change I would see would be with like younger personnel that could get open. But I don't expect any change scheme-wise as far as the playbook, play calling.
Let me ask you two a question. The big controversy, at least in my mind, or the big question is, will Billy make a change at offensive coordinator, basically demoting himself and hiring somebody else? Are you in favor of that happening, or are you still wait-and-see mode?
I'm in favor of it. I think the game has just changed, man. Like, you have to CEO this thing a little bit. You know, you're running a Fortune 500 company at the University of Florida. It's NIL. It's dealing with these players, whatever they got going on in their personal lives. You're dealing with a lot. And I just think he has to delegate that. You need a mad scientist like Austin Armstrong that's going to be in the film room to 3 in the morning, you know, just breaking down stuff. Is it an easy thing to do? No. You, 9 times out of 10, you want somebody that's in your system that you kind of a protege, I would say, that you could kind of delegate that play calling to, because now who's that guy, you know, and trying to find somebody that runs Billy's offense, like.
I think that's the hardest part, right, is because you get to where you are in your career, head coach at the University of Florida, usually because you're very good at doing one thing. In Billy's case, it was offense. And at some point, you have to take that role over as CEO and say, hey, I was very good. That's what got me here. But there also can be somebody else that might do this a little bit better than me with everything else that's stacked on my plate, right? Like, and he's totally given that to Austin Armstrong, right? Like, I saw it at the Tennessee game. When Austin Armstrong's calling his defense, Billy is on literally the opposite side of the
with
field.
With his Waffle That's House fast. Menu, yeah. Looking like, what's the next set of plays
but
for
what
us?
But I don't want him to do is have to do that the entire time the defense is on the field. I want him to be able to coach and spend time with whatever he needs to do and manage on the field. But to not be able to watch defense because you have to scheme what your next drive is going to be, that limits your ability unless you're a brilliant offensive mind. Obviously, we've seen some head coaches do it and do it successfully, but even the best and the brightest in the NFL are now having to hand that responsibility over.
Even Jimbo lied about not calling plays.
Even Jimbo lied
about and letting Petrino do it instead. I don't think Billy was, like Spurrier said, if you got your job because you called plays, why would you give that up? Like, you're here because of that. I don't think Billy was hired because he was an awesome X's and O's Saturday coach. He built a program at UL. He recruited better than anyone in the Sun Belt most of the years he was there. But it's a pride thing. It's like, hey, I got fired as an offensive coordinator at Clemson. I got passed over to call plays at Alabama. I got a chance, and we were really good at UL. Yes. Why would I give it up now? And I don't think he has an ego to the point where if this season trends poorly and you've got, you know, a Will Muschamp type of Florida team where the offense is in the low 80s and the defense, you're like, man, if you could just score 17 points a game, you might win a game or two here. I think if he looked at it and that's what the reality became this year, he would consider giving up his play calling duties. But if
and that would mean
it would have to go poorly.
But that would mean that there had to be a change on the coaching staff.
You could. I think right Russ Callaway is the only coach that has play calling experience on staff, and he's been here 2 years with Billy as an analyst and now coach.
Let me ask you all a question. Would Gator fans, if they finish in the 80s and it doesn't look good on offense, would the Gator faithful, and I know that that's not who's getting paid and they're not the ones calling the plays, right? But they're certainly loud and proud. Appreciate the ones that are here. Would Gator fans be happy if they kind of went bargain bin and found the tight end coach that they were kind of upset that they didn't go out and search for a different tight end coach that has experience calling plays at Samford? Are Gator fans
I think they'd be thrilled. They'd be super pumped.
So Nick says thrilled, thrilled. James?
I mean, that's obviously, I think, very sarcastic, but in season, you'd be excited.
Right.
Obviously, in the off season, I think you're looking for a guy like Armstrong to fill the void. But I think you hit the nail on the head when you talked about this, Dan, and you nailed it. No one, and you can look back and find it, no one that glowed about Billy Napier as a coach ever mentioned his offensive acumen even one time. And go look at what they said about Armstrong. Savant, genius, next level, new guy, new wave, tactician. That means a lot to me. What they did say about Billy, culture, rock solid, likable, builds a program, detail, discipline. Right. And so to me, if the five of us are sitting here and I know that you're super good at culture and you're really good at on-field tactician stuff and whatever, we need to play to our strengths and be humble enough to know that if I give you that responsibility, we're going to do better. I think and hope that Billy is humble enough for it. But I also understand, like, we're all people. There's things we love to do. I mean, what's more fun than calling plays and drawing up offense? Like, it's the most fun part about football. It's what I like the best, too. So to give it up is really hard. I get it. But hopefully he's looking at what's best for the program. And I think it's really hard to find a narrative now that says that Florida's offense, you know, 16, 17 games into his tenure, looks like an accomplished championship level program. And even if you imagine all the pieces being there, you got to deal with what, you know, my guy, the Dolphins coach, Mike McDaniel, said recently. When you're designing offense, you design it to break the rules of the defense. And the biggest problem I have on film study is the old school mentality is you design an offense, it's a Swiss Army knife, and it just kind of maybe works against everything, rather than the McDaniel philosophy. If I know you are going to do this, I'm going to run this exact play against you to break your own rules, because I know you won't cover that spot. And that's what we just don't see on film in the passing game from Florida. And that, and you mentioned that, Silk, that to me is an outdated philosophy, but most importantly, it's a less efficient and it lowers your expected value on offense. So that is why I have been saying I really feel like Florida's better off getting a guy who has more of that mentality rather than the one Billy has, even if all the players are there.
There's a lot of like reaction for Billy's offense, and when you look at Graham Mertz, it's like, hey, why is Florida dinking and dunking? Well, they're just taking the layups that are given to them. Mm-hmm. But at what point, as a play caller and as a guy who's running an offense, do you stop reacting to what defenses are trying to do to you and start forcing a defense's hand? Say, hey, listen, this is what we're going to do this Saturday, and we'll see if they can stop that, instead of like, well, we have a couple game plans, and if they come out in a cloud three, then this is the one we'll go with, and if they're going to be play more man and blitz, then this is what we're going to do, instead of dictating what defenses do against you, instead of waiting to react to what they're showing.
I know we want a successful season, but I mean, if he goes from six wins to eight, nine wins,
buddy,
that's progress. What do we do then? Like, everybody's mm-hmm. watching this season. SEC East is wide open. We could very well, if this thing clicked like it did the first half of Tennessee, you know, you go win eight, nine games, he could easily sell progress, you know, within the program. And that may keep you from getting an OC.
If Florida wins nine games, you're not getting an OC.
Right.
Well, maybe. I guess if it's me again, if I'm on the staff, I'm thinking, can I get to a championship level?
Right.
And maybe you win nine games, but you do it because your defense finishes top five and your offense finishes 55th. But I think to your point, which I still – this is the big question with Billy is, he's so systematic. Does he feel like when I get all my guys in, it'll be enough? And it will be better. I think that's fair to say. The offense will get better when he has more guys. We saw that already in Tennessee just with having Trey run the jet sweep. The defense respects it. They miss tackles. But it's hard to suggest it would be good enough in general. And so I think it's going to depend on the style. We talk a lot about style, Alan and I, but to your point, the average fan probably just sees the win increase and thinks, we're good. Let them keep cooking. And maybe if you look deeper, you say, but this is not going to get us from here to there. And that's the big question that we're all trying to answer now. Time will tell, right? Mm-hmm. I, for one, am hoping that we blow the doors off and just turn the corner on offense and look awesome. But I think the data on film would say, just like the data on film for the defense said, we're looking good. The offense looks like it is what it is.
Right, right. My last offensive question, these guys mm-hmm. might have more. What is the struggle of Montrell Johnson right now, in your opinion?
I mean, I think the data would say that it's just a broken tackle rate. If you look at ETN, he has, I think ETN's number one in the country right now, if this is correct, at broken tackles.
Correct.
Number one. And if you look at, you know, you can look at all sorts of great things, like Florida's 36% of their runs are contact at the line of scrimmage. That's true for ETN too. It just means that he is making that first guy miss. But I think, to really make it reductive, ETN is so quick to the hole. So quick to the hole that he's probably a full step or step and a half of where Montrell is. And that allows him, I think, to get more out of the offense. Where Montrell excels is Montrell has better vision right now than ETN does, especially in zone. He'll see the cutback lanes a little better than ETN will. But if those lanes aren't there, which they're not there this year, I think what that explains to me is, like, with a weaker offensive line, you're a more explosive guy who breaks tackles better. If the offensive line's gelling, I think ETN was still learning how to maybe maximize zone running. But to me, I think what we know for sure is that right now ETN is a much more productive runner. Does that mean we should run him a lot more against Kentucky? I would say so. Are we going to? I think that will be interesting because I do think Billy's been a good personnel guy. I think he plays the best guy, and that's how he runs the team. So I expect to see ETN get more shares, more carries of the this weekend, and I think we need him to. We need him to break those tackles.
Yeah, I was reading. I think Montrell Johnson is averaging about 2.5 less yards per touch before or after contact. So I know that came out a little weird. But you think there's a little bit of load management? Alan, I'd be curious to your thoughts, a little load management this week. I mean, the Gators only have three scholarship running backs, right? You have Montrell Johnson, Trevor Etienne, and Tre'Quan Webb. who's a true freshman. A little load management, maybe? Or?
Yeah, I would have not have run Etienne in that game at all. If I just give him like two or three carries, I think we gave him more because the game was still in doubt.
Right.
Because his brother was going to tweet
out. Yeah, well, I think if you're looking at the data and the yards per carry and all the advanced stats, if you're smart, you go, okay, I would rather have him later. I shouldn't need him for this game. And maybe they're hoping to get Traylon Webb 15 carries. That didn't happen because the game was too tight. But yes, that would be what I would hope. And I don't have any reason to doubt Billy in that area, I think. And you still want Montrell Johnson to have significant carries. You don't want to run 18 and 25 times a game.
Right, right.
All right, let's move to defense. Gators get addition by subtraction. Patrick Toney takes a job with the Arizona Cardinals. The Gators then go grab Austin Armstrong, who was at Southern Miss and then Alabama for 6 or 7 hours, comes to UF. Gators now have a top five defense. Not only do they have a top five defense, they seem to be improving on the defensive line. The linebacker group, Jay Bateman, got to give him his flowers. We're seeing some freshmen really step up in the safety room. We got a couple of thoughts and prayer tweets today by some older safeties on the team. But
Bible scriptures,
yeah,
baby.
Some Bible scriptures.
It's the time of the year.
Scripture season.
Scripture season. What is it about? Silka, start with you. Austin Armstrong's defense. I mean, energy's electric. What do you think's brought Florida from the doldrums to top five?
I mean, the scheme is I learned through, and shout out to these guys. I learned about Austin Armstrong's scheme after we made the hire through these guys' podcast and their content. You guys do a great job of just breaking it down and dumbing it down. I play ball, but you guys still dumb it down for me sometimes. You know what I'm saying? So I appreciate that. But I just think the scheme is very good. He's a genius with just scheming against offenses. He really gets into like the nitty gritty with trying to stop some of these teams, but the energy. I think it's contagious. It's a lot like Kirby Smart, Muschamp in his prime. You know, it's big on the sidelines. He comes from that pedigree, and you can just see the players react to it and respond to it. So outside of the scheme, I'll let these guys get into, you know, scheme-wise, why it's so excellent right now. But I think the energy fits, you know. Watching him on the content that the team puts out, it's very contagious. You can see guys like Tyreek Sapp, you know, Cam Jackson, a lot of leadership. And just some of the older guys are responding to him being on the team. So from that point, you know, energy wise, he just brings a different level. Patrick Toney was very, nothing against him, but he was a very reserved, quiet, laid back guy. Him and Billy was too much alike in that fashion, in my opinion.
I'd agree. Seems like we're maybe getting Corey Raymond the opportunity to do a little bit more coaching, call his scheme a little bit more. You're seeing a lot more press man coverage this year compared to last. Alan, James, kind of want to get your thoughts. Austin Armstrong, I mean, you couldn't really ask other than maybe a few more turnovers. I mean, these first four games have been spectacular for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think he is him is the right modern phrase to use, right? He is 100%. And, you know, we like to call him Coach Ham on the podcast, or at least I do, because from Sandlot, there's the great Hambino.
You can't tell me that.
And first, he kind of looks like him. But second, the energy that you mentioned is so, I mean, there's so much confidence coming out of Armstrong that it's like, this guy is Ham, man. He's walking at the pool. He's blowing kisses to the girls. You know, he knows that what he's doing is right and it works. Yeah. And that confidence is carrying over to the players, and they know that if they do their job, it's right. And that's the most remarkable thing on film that we have seen from last year to this year, is that first of all, like, everything on my wish list is accomplished. Like, whether it comes to run fit, gap control, rushing as a unit instead of as one guy, how we play the edge versus teams that want to send running backs into the flat, how Scooby is now a revelation at linebacker because we use him correctly. But to me, to be elite, you have to have top level talent, and you have to be an excellent communicator. And he's both those things. And that's hard. There's a lot of guys who understand football really well.
One thing I'm interested in this week is we know Austin Armstrong would love to send 11 guys, just bring pressure from everywhere. I think Florida has the potential to get pressure with just four that you might not have to, like against Tennessee, where you're like, hey, we're going to have a single high safety, and we need you guys to play man-to-man because we need to commit another guy to the box. I think if Florida can get pressure with four, you might see, hey, Devin Leary's windows now are a lot smaller, and if we can get to him with four, now you're going to see him having to try to force some things in and maybe lead to an interception.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The film would show that simulated pressures have really hurt Kentucky. Their offensive line has not picked them up well. Austin Armstrong runs some of the best ones, and Florida has great personnel to do it, especially with Princely, who I haven't mentioned yet. And Princely becoming a guy who's able to bubble out and cover the flat is like a revelation for what Florida wants to do with how they will send a linebacker oftentimes opposite the running back, and they're basically walling off the backfield for any of those short passes. Kentucky's weird. We said it on the pod. They get better with their passing success as they go down the field. Mm-hmm. So behind the line of scrimmage, 0 to 5 yards, they're struggling. Leary likes to throw a lot of like strong arm balls a little further down the field. And to your point, I think if Florida can get home on those sim pressures and take away the first read, he's often not going to get a second one. And that's already shown up on film. And, you know, Coach Hamm has been amazing at taking away first read stuff, something we haven't seen at Florida for a while. I think the matchup favors Florida defense versus their offense. And then to your point, the randomness is going to be Kentucky's oddly really high explosive rate. Third in the country in explosive plays, yet their success rate is really low, which tells you that they might run six plays, five of them are pretty crappy, one's a touchdown. And so that is going to, I think, probably determine the game.
And they have 8 or 9 drops this year. So if you're not dropping the ball, how high would it be?
Much better. So it's going to be a challenge, I think, for Florida. Very different style team than we faced before. They run under center a lot. But I think their running game is suspect because of their line. I think I have questions about their line, not about Ray Davis, who obviously torched Florida last year. If you recall him running all over us, we hope not to see that again. I don't think that is. Florida's number one in the country on rush defense, on success rate. I mean, they're locked down versus the run.
We're starting to see a lot more of the two freshmen at safety. Are we at all concerned going against Devin Leary with two true freshman safeties back there?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/BlueWire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Well, we were debating, is it Castell?
Castell, I believe.
Castell.
Okay, good. We need a confirmation on that.
I'm not the guy for that.
You just threw it out there.
He says a lot of stuff with his chest. He looked at me crazy when I was like, Micah Mazuka, like a rhyme to bazooka. He's like, you're an idiot.
Actually, Alan told me that too when I said it was Mazuka. He told me the same thing.
He still looked at me. He was like, there's no way that combination of letters creates that sound.
It does.
I concur.
But anyway, I'll just call him 14. I have zero fears about 14. Miguel Mitchell, you know, there's a lot to like about him, but still is a, you know, first-year starter. So I think that would be the place where you could get him a little bit. But 14 has been unbelievable.
Like so.
But we had 16. Bryce Thornton played a lot last week. Do you think we see Bryce Thornton continue to play more? Or?
I hope so. He's 18. Oh, yeah.
Moten 16.
Yeah, Moten 16.
Yeah, definitely talking 18, not 16.
Yeah, definitely 18. I would love to see Bryce Thornton more. I think he's got great football instincts. Mm. There's a couple plays towards the line of scrimmage that he made that was, if he didn't make that tackle, we had somebody running wide open on that play. But I think Bryce Thornton has some great instincts. And at this point, man, like, we've seen older safeties get barbecued. So, like, I'd rather go with the young potential, you know, and risk an aggressive mistake. You know, a guy that can come up and make tackles. Miguel Mitchell struggling with making tackles. He gave up the only touchdown that we had this past week. So, I'd rather go with the young, aggressive freshmen than older guys that are making the same mistakes, to be honest with you.
You want a younger cookout.
Younger good guy.
Younger cookout.
Younger cookout.
Younger barbecue.
Younger barbecue. I want to get everybody's opinion. You guys obviously watch more film than we do. Well, I speak for myself when I say that. Best cornerback on the team this season. Ooh. Nick?
Jalen Kimber.
I like that. I'm going to go with the guy who's not playing enough, in my opinion, which is Devin Moore.
Talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I think he's the best corner on the team. I think there's a big take we said on the pod this week. To me, I think Jason Marshall is your third best corner right now based upon film and performance. What we do with that, I don't know. But, you know, last year, Devin Moore, I thought, was the best corner before he got hurt as a freshman. And this year, I think he definitely is. Kimber's been really solid. I mean, Florida has a blessing of talent at corner, which is why I think it's hard to explain keeping three maybe in there for as many snaps as he's getting when you see these other guys that are, I think, performing at a higher level. And that's not a knock on Marshall as much as to say, hey, Marshall, if you're listening, like, you got to pick your game up. You got guys behind you that are playing really well. You don't have the luxury of just locking yourself in because you were a five-star and you're talented.
Right. I've been on this Devin Moore, like, bandwagon for a while, man. Everybody's been saying Jason Marshall. And I get the five stars, but when you cut the film on, you just look at physical abilities. Devin Moore is going to be an all-pro if he stay healthy. And that's been his thing. It's just, you know, being healthy, availability.
The best ability can't make the is club. Availability.
Yeah, you can't make the club in the tub, man. So if healthy, yeah, you got to go Devin Moore, hands down. Jalen Kimber's actually having a very good season. I liked him last year, even with the cast on his hand, but he's definitely
that
playing better.
That interception with the club was
impressive.
Majestic. Yeah. I'm a big Jalen Kimber guy. I used to be a big Jane Hill guy that –
The season does go as Jaden Hill goes.
I said last season the season would go as Jaden Hill goes. Obviously, Jaden Hill didn't go very far. The Gators.
He's doing a great job at star. He's been really solid. Really solid.
He's playing a lot better ball, man. I'm impressed.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with the Marshall takes here. Obviously, he has a ceiling that's pretty high, and you want to see him hit that. But also, these young guys are playing really well. And I will say, it feels like star nickel has been a problem for so long.
Yes.
For that not to be
not a problem.
A worry for this team. So, got to give Jaden Hill a ton of credit for playing a position that he just switched into so well.
And for a second, let's talk about that, because that's what Kentucky is going to challenge Florida with. They have three receivers who are all competent. They're targeted almost equally. In the past, we look at that and say, we're dead, because that means our nickel's got to cover somebody. But now, that's not a worry. And then after them, there's a huge drop-off. They lightly throw to their running backs. They lightly throw to their tight ends. So that's a luxury, and we're going to see. I think this will be the game where Jaden Hill shows us, is the knee, it looks healthy. It looks like he's back to how he was pre-injury. We're going to find out in this game. He's going to match it up with real receivers in the slot that they want to throw to. He's going to get challenged in this game.
Let's talk defensive line real quick. We mentioned Princely. We haven't talked about the defensive tackles. We've seen a resurgence there to a point where Florida has depth. I mean, I think we saw Desmond Watson only played 9 snaps last game against Charlotte. He was playing damn near 50 snaps last year. Per game. So defensive line, who's been the biggest surprise for you? Alan, we'll start with you.
I don't know if he's a surprise, but Cam Jackson was as advertised when you're bringing him in. He's the guy who's been dominant at times, but I love all these guys. Caleb Banks looks great. McClellan looks great. Even when they're bringing in the real inexperienced guys like Jabari Lyons. Like, I mean, everybody that were out there does the job. And to me, Tyreek Sapp, he's really done an admirable job of playing really what's probably out of position for him. Like, he's kind of a tweener a little bit. But I was worried about a pretty big drop-off with Justice Boudin going down, and that hasn't been noticed. Obviously, we're not, like, hitting the high-end sack rate stats, but all those guys have done great because I think they've been doing what they're being asked to do. And then you're seeing some of the flash plays from the defensive tackles, which is excellent.
And Tyreek Sapp got the shout-out from Warren Sapp. So, Silk, who's been your defensive guy? Defensive line
is so many to choose from. But I like Tyreek Sapp. Like, a lot of what he was just saying, from a standpoint, he was asked to Justice Boone go down. You're asking him to change positions for the team. He's been doing a little bit of that his entire career, just moving around inside, outside. But to see... Again, like, his on-the-field tenacity and just from the locker room, the passion that he plays with is just next level. We could talk about, like, the on-field stats and the scheme, but it's hard to find, you look in the last 5-7 years, to find Gators that are playing with passion. Yeah. You know, it just hits a little different. So yeah. I'm going to go with Tyreek Sapp from that standpoint, man. Just versatility. And, you know, he brings some energy to that defensive line.
Man, I mean, I just love talking about our defensive line. To think when Boone went down, we were worried because that was the spot where we didn't have a guy behind him. And you just mentioned Sapp comes in, and Florida playing a lot of two-gap this year, the D-tackle spot, and all those guys seemingly doing a really good job of that. That's not easy to do. And then our D-tackle is just generating so much pass rush. I mean, Caleb Banks on film frequently is just erasing the guy in front of him.
Right.
I have a hard time picking just one because they're all working together, which is what you want to see. Like, they recognize, all right, if the guy to the left of me is going to push in his lane and I push in my lane, one of us might get the pressure, but we're going to both do our jobs. And I there's a million guys to name, but I'll just go with the freshmen. Mm-hmm. To have freshmen defensive linemen in the SEC making plays like we're playing, whether it's Searcy, Kelby Collins blew up on film this past week. I mean, these guys are competent players out of the gate. You don't see that very often, and so...
You do. You see all of Alabama, Georgia.
Right.
All different kinds of places.
And so I want to pause for a second and say, for Billy, we talked about the offense, and we focus a lot on our pod about that frustration because I love offense. But she should get a lot of credit in general, offense and defense. The younger players, he's hit on so many of them being quality contributors. That is an immensely important skill for a head coach. So I want to take that moment to say that. And I'm going to cop out and not name one because, honestly, I just love them. These guys are all doing it. It just seems wrong. It's like all these guys are so good at any moment. I mean, I love it, and I love the energy. Like I said, they're playing with a real edge.
Yeah, even with, like, Cam Jackson has that same level of passion as well. He's dealing with some tragedy in his personal life, but, you know, leadership on the field, you can see Cam picking guys' heads up, him telling them we had three or a couple bad practices or whatever. He's coming out and telling guys like that in the media and also in the locker room. So, yeah, I'm with you, man. The whole unit is, from top to bottom, is super impressive.
The one I'm most surprised by, I think, is Caleb Banks, because I thought – didn't play much at Louisville.
I told
probably
you.
Probably a project.
I told you.
It's good fun, Nick.
Probably
it's
a project.
Good fun, bro.
Good.
I watched all that. I'm so like I try to find any glimmer of hope, you know? So I see this name, Caleb Banks. I look at the stats. She's like, this guy hasn't played. So I'm scouring the internet, and I seen practice film. And I told you, I like his get-off. I think he got an impressive get-off. I'm going to find some type of spark.
You know? I like it. You were right, though. He's
pumping that sunshine, man.
Yeah. That's normally what I do, pump sunshine. So I'm surprised. I didn't think he would be a guy that, one, would start this year or that would play a ton. But to what James said, I think Florida's defensive line and their defense as a whole is probably just like the sum of all their parts. There's not a really first-team All-American player on this defense, but you get 7-8 guys rotating in on the defensive line. They're keeping the linebackers clean, so the linebackers are flying around and they're making plays because they're not having to worry about a 320-pound guard shoving his face mask into their chest 4 yards up the field.
Right.
So I think it's really just the sum of all the parts. But I think in terms of who I'm surprised, is Caleb Banks has surprised me the most. Tyreek Sapp was a stand-up edge rusher at St. Thomas Aquinas. Go Raiders. They asked him to then play defensive end. He's like, all right, cool. I weigh 230 pounds. Need to gain some weight. Then they were like, hey, defensive end's nice, but what about tackle? He's like, okay, well, now I weigh 250, so like, let's try 270. Like, he weighs as much as like his body can healthily weigh. And then Boone goes down. They're like, hey, what about that stuff you did, like, in high school? Yeah. If you just wanted to, like, 3 years later now do that. And I said, listen, it's going to be hard for him to do that. He gained weight the right way. Gaining weight's a lot more fun than losing weight. But I wouldn't doubt him. And just to see the way that he's just done whatever the team has asked him to do, now playing, you know, back to a position he played when he was a freshman, the team kind of, like, looks to him. And as they've released more stuff on social media, you're seeing why, like, the team has looked to Tyreek Stapp, even last year when he wasn't playing a ton.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap this up. Gotta talk game changers a little bit. Our special teams has been nothing special at all this season.
Florida hasn't had a kickoff returned yet.
We have not had a kickoff return.
Pretty special.
It does look like Florida has their place kicker. Surprisingly, it is the five-star that was not kicking.
Surprise!
Doing a pretty decent job at that. James, Allen, Silk, Nick, what the hell is going on with special teams? We can't get 10 guys on the field. Notre Dame can't do it on defense. We can't do it on special teams. What the hell is going on with our game changers?
Are you the one who is like, what you call them, just the game change unit?
The game change unit.
You're missing the 11th letter.
Yeah, yeah. You haven't earned the 11th letter of what your unit's called yet.
Come on.
Good about that one, Allen.
Thanks. All right. So you can see if you get the specialist right, it looks better. If you have Smack in there and then Crawshaw is not shanking punts weirdly. But the fact that you're still having just the elemental, can we get the right guys on the field in game four, is kind of troubling. So if you have this unique, like, alignment with your coaching staff where you're just like, oh, we're just going to give this to an analyst, when it starts showing up at that level, then you have to start asking questions like, are we doing this the right way?
I mean, we can go on our phone right now on Amazon. They sell mats with 11 circles. And you can just put the $500. You put down this $500 mat. And then the coach says, hey, I need people standing on these 11 dots. And then when we go on the field, don't take the mat with you, but like the 11 of you that were standing on the dots, just go on the field and do the play. Like, it seems like there's a big budget.
Should we just go on Amazon and send it to the facility?
Yeah. Just send it straight to the facility.
To the couch household. Mm. James, want to get your thoughts. You analyze a ton of film. How many different groupings does Florida likely have for them to have this many issues with getting 11 guys on the field?
With 11 different numbers.
Well, yeah. That's a question there is, why don't you just tell your guys you can't wear the same number if you're going to be on special teams? I mean, whatever. But I digress. The answer is Florida has played a lot of what you would consider to be safe, punt safe.
Right.
And that is not necessarily their fault, because a lot of times, as we've seen this year, Florida's like frequently pinned inside the 5-yard line because opposing team special teams are drilling all their punts perfectly. It is a clinic. And it also means their field position has been pretty good when they're punting. And so that tends to be like a lot of 4th and 3, 5, 50-yard line, 45-yard line, when you probably want to be in some safe. That's not an excuse to mess stuff up. But I think when you have that, you do have a lot more overlap, to your point, with players, where you're going to have a returner, maybe two guys you sub, not the wholesale unit change. It doesn't matter, though, like you're saying. Most other teams do not have this problem on special teams. They make sure they're rallied up and ready to go. Obviously, as soon as it gets to even third down, you're lined up and ready immediately. Everyone's there. Florida looks like they're not ready for that. And I think it's fair to say that we have 2 years of data now to indicate that this game-changing unit, which is such a tragically horrible name for a unit that's been so bad, is so bad.
Yeah.
And in the Utah game, there's a few plays that really changed that game. And it's fair to say it could have been a different game if that doesn't happen. And so to have this still happening at this stage is negligence, for lack of a better term.
Accountability, right?
Seemingly none. Gloss over
some
it.
Some snarky remarks. Nick, I don't think
I'm getting yelled at. I'm getting yelled at, I think, more than anyone else.
Game changer.
Right now, and I don't think, to be fair to Billy in that, I think he thought incorrectly. The question was about not having a return guy back there, which is certainly fine in some scenarios.
In that scenario, the game's late. It's essentially over. They're waving a white flag by punting. We don't need somebody back there.
Fine,
to get that.
But I think he did not address the issue that was there's multiple times there were 10 people on the field again. And, you know, I did like to see Notre Dame obviously came out and openly said, I thought a lot of really nice honesty. We messed it up.
Yeah.
They could have lied. We knew it. We didn't want to, you know. No, we actually missed it as coaches. We're going to fix it. I think they've got to fix it is the bottom line, right? Like, if it costs us a game this week against Kentucky, it's unbelievable to think, to what you just said, you could hire any one of us right now on special teams. We'd make sure we didn't have duplicate numbers. We'd stay on the sideline, get 11 guys in the field, and it's not that hard to just get 11 guys in the field, you know? And we're struggling to do it every single game.
Yeah, I think to go with such an unconventional way to coach special teams with the way you set the staff up, you should have been competent enough to know you're not making those type of mistakes. You know, you set the staff up different. You don't have a special teams coach. So at this point, you know, after last year's blunder, I said all offseason, every show damn near that, I'm watching special teams, man. Like, I want to see some growth and some maturity. You getting Billy, you getting a guy that, you know, it's a long play. It's going to be some inexperience missing there, some game time, situational stuff that he's just not going to have the experience to go through. We're going to go through some rough spots. But at this point, you're talking special teams, man. Like, that unit is supposed to enhance the team, not hurt the team. And every game, it has hurt us and not enhanced us in any way. And it's the same thing last year.
And for a guy that is so organized and preaches organization, and preaches dotting every I, crossing every T, it just...
Right.
I've got a weird sense. I find that funny. Because, like, Billy is very... You could ask Billy, like, what they did at Clemson in 2007 on Wednesday, September 25th. And he has that written somewhere. He can pull that up.
He's like Rain Man with organization, unless it's about special teams. He's like the Men in Black, like little laser thing. Yeah. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Just getting ready for my next offensive drive. Wait, we did special teams where they were out there?
But we're all big fans of Billy Napier, friend of both of our programs. Let's wrap up here, guys. We have Kentucky this week. Nick already picked the Gators to lose. So, Nick, do you want to change that or do you want to stick with that?
I don't feel super strongly about that. Okay. But I did say all offseason that Florida was going to beat Tennessee and lose to Kentucky. So I'm kind of just like standing.
You got to balance that
paint.
Negativity out a little bit.
I might pick Florida on Gators Online this Friday to get both sides of the fence.
Makes a guy full of conviction.
So I'm really just like standing on my business from all offseason. I don't feel great. I think it was like 24-17. I think it would be a low scoring game. Turnovers could cause Florida to blow Kentucky out. But looking at Florida's defense, like, I don't know outside of Florida coughing the ball up on offense that Florida's going to get blown out really in any game outside of Jacksonville this year.
Not that we ain't getting blown out of Jacksonville either. I don't like that.
Yeah.
I don't like the sound of that.
I'm just gonna start needling you about Jacksonville.
Don't you wish that on me, Ricky Bobby? Oh, what do you guys think about Kentucky in this matchup? Before we wrap this up, what do you think about a Kentucky matchup?
Man, I think the reality is like Mark Stoops runs a defense that, you know, rarely plays man. Less than 20% they play man. They play a ton of zone in the back end. They keep everything in front. They have good linebacker play. And in reality, that is exactly how you play against Billy Napier's offense, because it's not an offense that challenges safeties 2-on-1. It's not an offense that challenges linebackers 2-on-1. Kentucky uses their conflict defenders really well, either their nickel or their outside linebacker, to play both the run and the pass. We saw it last year. Billy had no answer for this. It looked like AR broke mentally in that game. Things were so bad. He needs to have a different answer this time, because Stoops runs what Stoops runs. He's very interesting as a DC, because he doesn't really run necessarily what you would consider to be like specific game plans per team. He's not a Belichick. He's like, this is what I run. We're going to run it. And in large part because their personnel often doesn't allow them to play man because he doesn't recruit to that. So all that to say, our offense versus their defense is a matchup where their defense is fine. It's fine. Like success rate, middling. It looks great on regular stats, but I think middling... What happens there? Can we score enough? Do we not turn the ball over? I think on film, our defense has a decided advantage versus their offense, even though their offense is the best part of their team. But how do you figure out how that's going to turn out? I think you could play this game 10 different times and get 10 different results based upon probably just a couple of plays. And that's why I think it's so hard to predict.
They have it's not like a prevent defense, but it's like an umbrella. Like, you just line up here. We're keeping everything in front of this.
Yep.
And Florida has shown, listen, if that's what you're giving us, and you're giving us 5 yards of cushion, like, we're going in the paint and we're laying the ball up, you're going to see some of that dink and dunk. But they do a really good job of rallying to the football, Kentucky's defense. But I've seen Mark Stoops outcoach Dan Mullen, who I think is a great Saturday coach. Dan Mullen, X's and O's, drawing up a game plan, adjusting the game plan in the game. I think he's great. And Dan lost to Mark twice.
Yep.
I don't think Billy is that same level that Dan was on Saturdays. And that's kind of where I leaned when I picked Kentucky. Like, I've seen
he also lost to McElwain a bunch.
I mean, listen, before Jim McElwain self-destructed, they had that thing cooking recruiting-wise.
Recruiting-wise.
Had that thing cooking.
Topic has not changed.
They won the East twice.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be...
Yes, they did. You're correct. Florida did win the East twice.
There you go. Good point.
Yeah, great point, Nick. I mean,
it's going to be close, I think, most of the time. Again, if you run, you simulate this 100 times, it's going to be close more often than not. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about turnovers earlier. Who has them? That's the most reductive way to talk about a football game. But I think that really is going to be. I picked, I think, 2017 Florida yesterday. And when you pick it that close, anything can happen. That, again, entertaining or scary, depending on your viewpoint.
I do like that Graham Mercer's not turnover prone, right? And their quarterback is. I think the key is going to be, you know, we already know what our passing schemes are like. And what we're going to take what they give us. But if our running game is explosive, if Trevor Etienne is on point like he was Tennessee game, I think we can jump up two possessions and control the time of possession and the clock. And I think that's Billy's, like, aim.
Oh, he loves milking the clock.
Oh, for sure. That's his bag.
Yeah. The clock is his udders, and he's just the milkman. At
least he's not, like, celebrating it, though. Like, that was Will Muschamp, like, loved time of possession.
Big time of possession guy.
Like post-game, when the NBA, when they start looking at, like, the stat sheets, Will, they had to, like, highlight it for him. Like, hey, don't, like, get lost here. There's your time of possession.
I love it. James, we have a winner out of you.
Yeah, I picked Florida to win 21-20, which is funny because I really think that Florida does win. They probably win like 21-10. But I'm acknowledging all the incredible randomness that's probably going to happen in this game that I can't attribute to. But again, you're flipping a coin. Just sit at home, flip coins, see which one it lands on. There's a lot, though, to be intrigued, I think, from a football perspective, and mainly on Florida's defense. Again, how does the blueprint to stop Kentucky look like? And on Florida's offense, we said, kind of funny, might seem interesting, I think if Florida has a 41% or better completion rate on third down, are we 41% successful on third down, we probably win this game. Now, in the season, we're at like 33%. And Kentucky, surprisingly, is not a good third down defense. So that actually is the chink in the armor. I think if we do that enough, I think our defense carries a day for us, closes the door and gets a W. But, man, good luck. I would not bet this game even for a second. This is so all over the place.
Silk, I know you picked the Gators from out Stadium and Gale. Sticking with it?
Yeah, same thing, man. 17-24 is where I got it at.
What about you?
I think I picked 24-16. I think it was a weird score. 26-16, 26-16. Yeah, you know,
I don't know. Right. A lot of field goals.
Yeah, just some field goals. Maybe a missed extra point. You know, you can't trust college kickers. Nick wants to.
No.
I do think it's a game. It is kind of weird to say. I'm glad the game's at noon and not at 7 o'clock.
Honestly,
Kroger Field.
So the first time I went there, they had just finished renovations. Like, it's not loud because it's 61,000. Like, the only stadium I've been to that really rivals Florida is LSU in terms of loud and how crazy they are. But it does – they are into it. Like, the fans show up. They're there. It's going to be sold out. They rushed the field 2 years ago. That was wild to see.
Yeah.
I think that is a good thing. Now, listen, there's going to be bourbon flowing at 7 a.m. Like, the fans that are going to be there are not going to be, like, wiping – you know, sleep out of their eyes, they will be ready to go. So, but I do think it is an advantage to have it as a noon game rather than 7. You can consume a lot more bourbon for a 7 p.m. game than you can for a noon.
Well, you're up to the test, Nick.
Challenge accepted.
Challenge accepted by me. We're going to get out of here. I want to thank James and Alan. Thanks so much from the Gator Nation Football Podcast. Why don't you guys plug social media where they can find you, follow you?
Yeah, pretty much just hit up anywhere you're on social, Gator Nation Full Podcast, GNFP, and you will see us there. You can also reach us on email, which is outdated, but people still do it. So if you want that, we're there too.
Sorry we didn't bring any hair to match your hair. The best hair we could bring was Dan's.
Hey.
Hair.
Look, your hat is clean, though, man. Anytime the state of Florida is on a hat like that, right there on the side, yeah, you got to give that to the – that thing is clean. I like that.
Already, man.
Well, thanks for having us.
This was awesome.
This is top notch.
Absolute blast. Thanks to Social at Midtown for hosting us today. I think these guys, you can follow us, obviously, on State and Gale on all social media. I think we have an email, too. Maybe it's on our website. Maybe it's not. Who knows? But, man, it was a pleasure seeing you guys, meeting you guys. Let's do it again soon. And thanks, everybody, for watching. Go Gators, and we'll see you guys soon.